Welcome back to the Omni Gamers Club podcast. My name is Mark Uessa.
And I am Daniel Winter. How are you, Mark?
I'm very well. I'm excited. I guess I'm just jazzed from surprise. We just finished recording the last week's episode. We record them back to back. So I'm happy to roll into this, our main featured game, which happens to be Another Crab's Treasure.
But free under the sea here, Mark. Very exciting.
Yeah, that's right. So let's dive under the sea for the second time in 2 months.
Yeah, it's getting a trend now.
That's right. We have a theme going on, a mini theme, an arc, if you will, to discuss the future game, Another Crab's Treasure. Tell us about Another Crab's Treasure, Daniel.
Yeah, so this came out this just last month, I believe, May 2024, developed and published by Agro Crab, directed by Nicholas Kamen.
Right, and written by Kaelin Pollock, I believe. Yes. What type of game is this? I think you said at the end of our last episode that this is a Shoals-like.
Pick your crustacean-based pun of choice.
Yeah, this game is basically 98% puns. Spoiler alert. That's the bulk of what we're going to be talking about. It is Shoals-like based. So,
do you want to quickly describe what that means to those who haven't, who aren't sickos like
sure.
us who have played all the From Software games?
Yeah, I was just going to say that you better prepare to get good, right? G-U-D. Souls-like games are basically named after a series of games initially from developer FromSoft out of Japan. I think the original game that started it all off was Demon's Souls, but probably the one that made it a breakout success and more famous was Dark Souls. Dark Souls, of course, has been with us for several iterations. There was a remaster of the first one recently. There was 3 mainline entries into the series. And then
Sekiro, Bloodborne,
and then there's
recently
been
Elden Ring.
Spin-offs. And thus, Souls-likes. They're like Dark Souls or Demon's Souls. But yeah, now so many games, even these Soulsborne games are typically 3D action RPGs that were really quite difficult and punishing, and they rewarded grinding and mechanical proficiency. Like, you just got to have the reaction time.
Combat-heavy games that sort of have a very high skill ceiling, a lot of intricacy, like a lot of interacting mechanics and things
like memorization.
To balance.
Boss
high reflex level, shall we say,
right.
in dodging and blocking and memorizing attack patterns of bosses and things. And the key, like the name Souls as a mechanic, is from the you're basically collecting these resources. Every enemy you kill, you're collecting resources that souls or microplastics in today's game. That you can spend to upgrade your character and get good, as you said. But if you die, you lose all those, or at least you drop them all on the ground. You've got one shot to go and collect it. A little bit like the corpse run in World of Warcraft or other MMOs. You have to go to your corpse, collect all the souls that you dropped before you die again.
Right. And of course, if you do die again, then all those XP are forfeit. So, of course, it's very tense. And that builds in a lot of basically just tension. You want to get good. You want to keep hitting it. You're frustrated when you get defeated by a boss.
You're rising to the challenge, right? That's like they're deliberately difficult in that they want you to try and... It's trying to train you to improve and build up so you can beat a boss, maybe fighting it 50 times. I struggle to actually get proficient at them rather than just brute force them by leveling up, for example.
Yeah, my methodology is called cheesing it, which is to say I look for every hack and every basically underhanded way to play the game possible, using every kind of loophole or advantage point of shooting from around a corner, whatever cheap method I can to level up, I'll take.
Well, today's game definitely has that in spades. You might call, say, bananaing it. I don't know if you saw that little detail.
I don't know if I did see anything about a banana. But
say someone in the game, not to spoil on things, someone in the game has a banana allergy that can be utilized.
Okay. There are a lot of secrets in this game, which is fun. But yeah, let's talk about more about Another Crab's Treasure.
Mm.
Of course, the name itself is a analogy to that age-old saying, another man's treasure is a...
One man's garbage
is another man's treasure.
And there's certainly a lot of garbage in this game.
There certainly is. It's central to the theme. You said that the souls or the XP are called microplastics in this game. And you start off with this character, a tiny little hermit crab called Krill, K-R-I-L. They just live in this kind of beat up sort of conch shell, which has a ding on it and a Band-Aid slapped on, and the shell gets stolen away. And it's basically nonsense. Like the plot doesn't really matter. It just gets you started on your journey to go out there and get your shell back. Right. And of course, along the way, the unique special sauce to this game is that not only are you defeating creatures and earning microplastic XP, you're also acquiring and finding new types of shells.
Yeah.
And those new types of shells give you at least one special ability, and then they have a varying ratings of sort of defensive ability, and then there's this thing called umami as well.
Well, it's basically your armor. Like all of the rather than having like five or six slots for your shield, your helmet, your boots, everything is reduced down to one slot. That's your shell. And you can mix and match a lot of abilities and statistics within that, basically.
Yeah, and I suppose later on, I don't think this is much of a spoiler, but you get unlock this ability called like the hammer. So you can you can basically skewer another type of shell, and then it goes onto the end of your primary weapon, which is like this cocktail fork, I guess you could say. Your little crab has claws. I don't know why they needed a fork. But you can basically carry a secondary piece of armor on the end of your fork, use it as a hammer for a heavy swing, and by the press of a button, you can actually swap between them. So you can change out your shell, which
the game didn't really mention that, dynamism. But I realized it's basically a second slot. You can have a second shell available to switch between, which is pretty...
It's really powerful and effective if you can kind of load up with the shells you will need to defeat a certain type of boss. But I think we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves there. So there's a lot of differences between this game and your typical Souls-like games. For instance,
it's a bit of a hybrid for one thing.
Yeah.
It's also a platformer.
Yeah.
It feels a little bit like a sort of PlayStation 1 era platformer like Spyro, I actually didn't play any PS1 games. I was a Nintendo fanboy, so my point of reference would be something like Banjo-Kazooie. Or even Mario to a lesser extent, I guess. I don't know if you have any fondness for that era of platformers.
No, my PS1 experience was playing RPGs or really obtuse puzzle games out of Japan, like Intelligent Cube or Fantavision or something like that. I never played your Crash Bandicoots or things like that, Spyros.
Yeah, so I mean, it's pretty rare for Souls like to even have a jump button. Without it being this really, I mean, you usually can if you have to run and then jump, and it's this very clunky system. Those games largely glue you to the ground, so it keeps you very predictable, and you know how your character is going to react. Like you stuck to the ground, and you can move in very predictable ways. Whereas this, you're jumping, you're floating, you're swimming around. So a lot of verticality to the levels and how you're jumping around. And there is some sort of platforming in how you're maneuvering from one zone to the next, basically. Like, there's not many abilities like those games. Like, there's a grappling hook that you use for some sort of jumping puzzles, but largely it's just jumping. It's not a lot of depth to that side of things.
Yeah, the grappling hook is actually more beneficial than you might think. It is very necessary for traversing the map in a lot of parts. But it's also good for, you can snag if you unlock the upgrade. I'm just going to tell you mechanical things because those aren't spoilers in my opinion. You can unlock an upgrade that allows you to snag a piece of armor from a distance. That's very handy at points, but not that you won't be using that all the time.
Well, you can primarily pull closer to you or pull yourself to them in some useful ways.
That's right. There's two other ways to use the hook. Is you can drag an enemy down to you, and if you time it just right, there's this sort of like Control mini game where you have to get the fishing line.
I had no idea what that was. I could never figure it out.
I use it all the time. It's basically you can drag an enemy towards you, and if you time it just right, you sort of freeze them.
Oh.
And if you get there, sort of, what is it, the yellow bar, the sort of the stamina bar filled out, if you do a strong attack, you can knock a creature onto their back, at which point they get extra defenseless.
That's a key thing here I'll get to, is that the combat starts out very basic compared to these other games. Like something like I've played a lot of these, like Team Ninja has a whole series, like Neo and Wolong, that are even more complicated and have like just different stances and different weapon modes and switching in and out of all these different mechanics. Whereas this starts very simple. You've just got your shell. Like the one weapon, the weapon is always the same, but everything is reduced down to your shell, basically. And you've got a couple of attack modes, and that's it. And then you gradually start upgrading, basically a skill tree that unlocks new mechanics. This is every sort of item on that skill tree is changing things up. Like you just mentioned, the hammer, or like a jumping attack, or a power attack, or even the grappling hook might be, or some of the effects of the grappling hook are at least locked away there.
Yeah.
So it does sort of roll these out gradually over time. In that sense, it's quite good. It's quite an accessible one of these. It doesn't overwhelm you with all these mechanics. By the end of it, it actually felt like a pretty fully fleshed out Souls-like game, like with all the mechanics, all the tools at your disposal. But it doesn't overwhelm you. Like you can unlock these at your own pace.
Yeah, I feel like maybe this might be the most accessible Souls-like game that I've played in my limited experience. The only ones that are more accessible I can think of are more of like the 2D oriented Souls-like games.
Yeah.
Which some argue aren't really Souls-like games, but they have similar characteristics. Like a popular game Hollow Knight has that concept of, it's kind of like a Metroidvania, but it has that souls, recovering souls, a mechanism unlocking upgrades and the ability to swap out equipment. And this game uses very similar techniques. In fact, there's this smaller technique in this game, this mechanism called stowlings. Is that what they're called?
Stowaways.
Stowaways. Yeah. Right. So basically you start off with, I think it's 3 or 4 or 5 kind of like pip slots
that you can spend. Yeah.
Yeah. And so some of these stowaways are size 1, size 2, or size 3. So of course, if you have 5 pips, you can only have 1 size 3 and 1 size 2, or 1 size 3 and 2 size 1s.
You can unlock more pips as the game goes on.
That's
you
right.
Unlock new, like this is basically the badge system from Hollow Knight or Prince of Persia. I discussed last episode.
Mm-hmm.
The new Prince of Persia game had a very similar system. So you can really customize your builds further there. So some of these stowaways will just increase your attack but decrease your defense, or vice versa. Some will increase your umami, so your magic damage basically, but decrease the charge time of that. So there's a lot of them have a bit of push and pull, but you can really craft a unique build. And I actually quite enjoyed that. There's not a lot of builds in this game, but it's a pretty streamlined, simple way of getting some, expressing yourself in some unique ways.
Yeah, I feel like that was the strongest way to customize your character.
Mm.
And in fact, I was swapping out those stowaways with every boss fight, certainly.
Nice.
If I wasn't succeeding on the 8th or 10th try, I'm going to try some different things out.
Mm.
So that could be different shells or different stowaways. Or another thing that eventually gets unlocked is these things called adaptations. I'm not going to mention some of those because those actually are locked,
I guess,
through story progression.
They're like sort of alts of superpowered abilities.
Right, yeah. There's actually layers to this game. So if you feel like this game seems too baby's first action game in the first level, just give it a bit of time. Yeah.
So that's very simplified compared to like Dark Souls, for example, has like 8 stats, but then those feed into like 50 other stats. And a big part of the not to say the difficulty, but the friction in those games, it's not just the mechanical friction of the moment-to-moment combat, it's just learning how those systems function. There's always like the ongoing joke is, what does poise mean? There's none of that here. Everything is like reduced down to just those four stats. It's all very understandable and very simple. And so you're not trying to like having to decipher what the mechanics actually do.
Right.
All the equipment is reduced down to that one shell. And then otherwise you're just expressing yourself through those stowaways.
Yeah. So we've been talking a lot about how this game mechanically differs from a lot of Souls-like, but we haven't really touched upon kind of that 800-pound gorilla in the room. But this game is cute. Like, this game is bright. It's colorful. It's funny, or at least it's trying to be funny. Like I said, it's got a billion puns in there, so you're going to be groaning at a lot of those.
You ready to shuck some shell? No, shucking shell.
Yeah, that's right. Lots of minced oaths in there, let me tell you. But unlike pretty much every other Souls-like game, this game is heckin' cute, and it's colorful. And so that's going to draw in a whole different audience, or just really please some, and potentially push some maybe hardcore feeling players away. I think this game is fantastically styled. It's quite low res. You mentioned like 90s PS1 era games. It does feel a bit like that.
There's not much of a draw distance. It's like everything feels very murky, which kind of fits for the Under the Sea. Like it feels like there's constantly sort of dust and sand thrown up in front, so you can't really see these grand vistas. There's no little landmarks in these levels. There are some really striking level designs going on.
Yeah, it's as hazy as like a Silent Hills up in there. Exactly. Sometimes.
Yeah, well, that part is definitely in the sort of PS1 era.
Yeah, and not only that, this game is like exceptionally rough at times.
I had a lot of technical issues.
Yeah, I had a lot of technical issues. So I was playing on the Series X. I imagine you were too. Okay, so I experienced pop in, slow down, clipping, getting trapped on geometry. There's no wonder there's a die instantly button. And I experienced an honest to goodness crash.
Yes. Same. Which I had to reboot a couple of times. It didn't crash, but I had to force close it in order to get it to fix itself, basically. So definitely some issues to fix here.
So I feel like this game might have suffered from, you know, crunch or an impending launch date. I don't blame them. I don't know how big AggroCrab is, but I imagine it's very difficult to put out a game of this scope. It's a lot longer than I thought. It's an ambitious game.
For a small studio. Yeah.
For sure. This is their second game. I think their previous game was one I haven't played, but I know of.
Going, it's called Under. Going
Under.
Yeah.
And
there's
a little bit of nods to that game in here. There's a Going Under outfit.
So I played a little bit of that when it was on Game Pass a few years ago, and actually played a little bit of it yesterday just to refresh myself. It's a roguelike set in you're basically going into the basement of a corporate startup. It's very much a satire on corporate culture, but that company is Fizzle, a soft drink company, which you'll immediately recognize as one of the first shell you find in Other Crabs is a can of Fizzle.
Nice. It's the Aggro Crab cinematic universe. I love it. Yeah, there's lots of jokes here, and there's lots of satire here, too. This game pokes a lot of fun at capitalism, at corporate greed. And it's, I said, it's very bright and colorful and lighthearted most of the time, but it goes to very dark places thematically and story-wise, and it has a undertone. I don't even know if it's an undertone or an overtone of sort of environmentalism. Like, there's a lot of pollution and trash.
Yeah.
It's big visually and thematically in this game.
Yeah, well, I mean, the whole game is set in the remnants of human trash, and like the animals are using that to literally build their world. Like a lot of them are using straws as swords and lances, or dental floss picks as weapons. The main city is all cardboard boxes with bridges of CVS receipts. Right. And that's one of the coolest things about this game, I would say, is the world building. And that they've had so much creativity and fun has gone into the designs and how those items are utilized. Because obviously, like, we're talking about small crabs here. It's a bit of a Honey, I Shrunk the Kids or sort of grounded, that video game aesthetic. And like, small things made big, the scale of it.
Well, let's be honest, this game like draws upon the age-old kind of Disney Pixar thing, right? It's the Bug's Life, It's the Chippendales Rescue Rangers, Finding Nemo, other things that are not Disney, like SpongeBob SquarePants or Tinykin. Like, all of these worlds are... the joke is that undersea or tiny animals live just like us.
Reinterpreting human culture or sort of twisting it. There's one really fun one, as an example, one really fun one I wanted to shout out. In slight spoiler for a boss, but is one that takes place on a sushi boat.
Right.
And the boss has a pair of chopsticks. Like, he pulls the chopsticks out of the paper sleeve.
Yeah.
Like, his unsheathing sword.
Right.
And he's using that as a weapon. But then when he goes into his second phase, he snaps the chopsticks in two and is using it as like a dual wielding. And that's just like, there's so many layers of really cool details going on there that they've had so much fun with.
Yeah, you got to give AgroCrab credit, because it could have been cheesy. It could have been very stereotypical, you know, sight gags. But they went that extra step. And there's a lot of love written into even like the item descriptions, the can textures, like you said, little inside jokes like fizzle here and there.
Mm.
We talked about this on our last episode for a tabletop game, but this game also features indie game nods to other indie game studios and characters. So there's costumes you can buy. You can buy a Cult of the Lamb costume. You can buy the Going Under costume. You can buy what other ones were there. There was quite a few.
Dark Souls. I think it's a Dark Souls helmet you can find.
Among Us. There's a lot of there's a literal Among Us shell that you can buy. So there's a lot of touches to other indie games there as well. So
yeah, I mean, I just want to quickly follow up on that world building discussion. Yeah. Like, I think they're really good at building those details of world building. I don't think it entirely coheres as a like, it doesn't make sense as a world, right?
Yeah, the arc of it is interesting. Like, I would say, you know, you're right. I totally agree with you. As a viewer, as a player, don't think too hard about it. Like, I would just recommend this for anyone maybe trying it on in the future, is don't imagine yourself living in this world so much. For some reason, like, they're a bizarro world where they use trash as their economy, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
They're buried in it, and they think, hey, trash that falls down from the sky, aka up the surface
free
of the
money.
Ocean, is a miracle, and they love it because they build everything around it. But they're slowly realizing that there's dark sides to it.
The game does question that, and yeah, go to some dark places. Like, it starts out basically Krill's a sovereign citizen trying to like avoid paying his taxes. I mean, they didn't even know what taxes are. Taxes have just been invented, so he doesn't want to pay them. But then gets to very anti-corporate, environmental, but like also for like nihilism, doom, like the fight against doomerism, against capitalism. So there's definitely some real layers to this.
Yeah, there are nods to it. I don't think it takes a very strong stance.
It's subtext.
Yes.
Yeah. A lot of it, like, is very little. There are cutscenes with like spoken dialogue that's deployed pretty inconsistently.
Right.
There's a lot more optional dialogue you can have with characters that will spell out a lot more of that subtext, but it's quite easy to miss a lot of that. It's still a more explicit story than you typically get in a Dark Souls game.
Yeah, I agree. There's actually a fully fleshed out cast of characters and side characters. There's recurring sort of, I don't know if you call them helpers or whatever, but somehow, wouldn't you know it, you really struggled hard to do this platforming puzzle. You swung some ropes. You got to this very far corner of the map, and your buddies are just already there waiting for you. Wouldn't you know it? Why don't they just finish the game for you if they found it so easy to reach this point ahead of you?
It is fun to have this sort of core party, and you see them, like, you see the characters moving around the world and experiencing it alongside you. There is a sort of sense of camaraderie as you progress through these levels.
Yeah, and some characters that are like the shopkeeper, and there's like three or four different kind of shops and upgrade stations in the main city, which you reach sort of in the kind of first third of the game, where you will go to a lot. You'll go back and forth to those upgrade stations and upgrade your stowaway capacity or your weapon strength, or you can go ahead and buy shells. By the end of it, I had so much XP microplastics. I just bought it all. I just bought every little thing. By the end of it, I maxed out my upgrade tree 100%, and I maxed out those adaptations as well, which you can eventually power up. But I found that, like, you can beat the game pretty handily without maxing out certainly the adaptations.
Yeah. Well, here's a question. What build, to the extent that you can have a build in this game, but what did you focus on in this game?
I focused on not so much umami. So umami was probably least, and probably second least was resistance. So I focused on health and attack.
Hmm. See, I would normally go for like an agility-based sort of dodging around build in these games, but partly because in Souls-like games, the magic systems are so opaque and convoluted and just clunky. So I went all in on the umami system.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, partly because umami is just fun to say, right? But it's quite versatile in that every shell has a different umami ability that you can spend your these little charges to do a spell. And the more you increase your umami stat, the more damage you can do. So basically, you're boosting the variety of ways in which you can do damage and extra tools in your disposal. So I, partly as a test, I doubled down on that completely. By the end, my umami damage was so high, I didn't even have to swing the sword. Huh. Just trigger some, like the fizzle. The first show you find, for example, can of fizzle, it'll spawn a bunch of bubbles that will home in on enemies and do a little bit of sort of splash damage. But once you start boosting that, like 400% damage for each of those bubbles, just kill multiple enemies in one go without ever swinging your sword. So that was fun. I mean, it's not particularly skillful way of doing it, but it was satisfying.
That's very interesting. Yeah, I played quite differently. So it goes to show that you can play in a bunch of different ways. So we talked about the game length and getting to it. I don't think it's exceptionally hard. I died a bunch at a lot of the bosses, as you might imagine you would.
Yeah, this game is punishing, I think. Like, it's if you're experienced with these, you might not have a hard time with it. But if you are new to these, like, it wants to be an accessible Souls-like, I think it still is incredibly punishing. There's a lot of bosses that will just kill you in one hit. Like, no warning, just you're dead. And if you miss that, then okay, start again. So and there's the unblockable attacks.
Yeah.
That, like, in a lot of games, like, oh, the enemy flashes red, and so you know you've got to get out of the way. Where in this, it's just this tiny little icon that will just appear above you, and sometimes that blends in with the boss or the background, and so it's very easy to miss those cues. And so there's a lot of things that are easy to get curb stomped by here and miss those details.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of abilities that are built in towards dodging or blocking. You're right. Some of those attacks are just so powerful that you're going to get hit no matter what. I felt, you know, like, we did cover another Souls-like game somewhat recently, although it's not really billed as a big Souls-like game, but it was Jedi Survivor.
Oh, yes, yeah.
I felt like the boss battles in this were more frequent but less difficult than some of the later bosses in Jedi Survivor.
Interesting.
And I think it's less difficult because of the arc. Like, this game, like, gently eases you into a lot of the gameplay mechanisms, gives you a lot of degree of control on how to build out your character. For instance, you and I built out quite differently from each other. And also, it has other gentle touches as well. Like, I don't know if other Souls-likes do this, but you have, like, unlimited retries for the boss battles, and they let you even recover your microplastics. You respawn right there, you get your shell back, you get your microplastics, and you can just walk the other way and then come back another day. Or you can just keep going at the boss.
Throwing yourself at it over and over again.
Yeah. Which I did.
I think there is a fundamental issue here, and it's just the crabbiness of it all, in that the shape of these creatures, like, they have weird sizes and hit, like, the way they move and the way they have very wide swings, right?
Sure.
And so it's just really hard to judge how far a crab can reach and where to position yourself. And they all move incredibly fast. Like, if you're trying to get some distance just to, like, take a health, but that takes some time, and the bosses all move incredibly fast. So I found it very hard to recover. Once you start taking damage, like, a lot of the enemies will hit you into the air or pummel you into the ground, that is very hard to recover from. So there's a lot of little details there that I just found surprisingly punishing for how accessible a lot of the game was otherwise.
Yeah, definitely the boss battles are, like, the high tension, high difficulty part. There's about, I don't know, like, eight or 10 notable bosses?
Dozen, at least, I'd say.
Sure. Yeah. And a lot of them were, like, nails hard. The first one definitely wasn't that hard, but obviously it ramps up.
Mm.
I just mostly did the brute force thing of ramming my head into them over and over again, changing out my build between attempts, and mostly that worked out. I didn't really use any of the accessibility options, of which there were a lot. yes. I admit, I did check it out, and there's a fun one, which I don't know if we're going to spoil or not.
Oh, it's right there.
But there was only one boss battle, because I thought it was the last boss, and I'm like, I really want to make the deadline on this. I'm just going to, like, lower the speed or whatever a little bit, and then I beat it, and then there was, like, three more bosses after that.
After that phase two.
Yeah, exactly. And I also realized new ways I can sort of cheese the game.
Mm.
Like, this is not a spoiler. This is just a pro tip because it, like, the game lets you do it. But there's these things called, there's a stowaway called Another Crab.
Oh, yeah. I never used those. Yeah.
I never used those until the last two bosses. And I realized this is the way you beat tough bosses. It's like a built-in cheat. So
extra life.
Another Crab is a literal extra life. If you die, you don't die, you respawn, and you gain half of your health, but none of your healing kelps, your heart kelps. So basically, it just gives you another half a life to keep going, and it's still the same run. So you don't restart. Mm. So you can literally have like four times your life value if you stack up a bunch of those. And so I would say, whenever you find those Another Crab stowaways, keep them. Buy them, keep them in your inventory until the end of the game, and just blow them all on the boss fight. And I beat the last couple of bosses that way. They just give me another three or four attempts at it in the same run. And it was pretty easy.
Yeah, I know accessibility has been an ongoing issue with these games. Like, there's been a big debate as to, like, the official Souls games have never had difficulty options. There's no easy mode or hard mode. It's just the one difficulty and that's it. So this has the accessibility options that you can tweak. Like, you can increase the damage that you do, or increase the parrying window. It's quite granular in the sort of elements that you can choose to focus on tweaking based on what you're having difficulty with. Personally, like, I'm all for accessibility options. It does not devalue my enjoyment of the game at all, but I want to be able to rise to the challenge and meet the game where it's at, or at least try to at first attempt. I don't know that the game does a good job at training you into that by, like, essentially with so many enemies that just one shot you. There's very little chance for response or recovery. I think I could have done a better job of training you into trying to get good before you go to those accessibility options.
I don't know. I think maybe you built too much into a mommy because I wasn't getting one-shotted by a lot of guys. Yeah. So this game, I would say it felt long. Like, it felt long for me. It felt about 2 or 3 hours longer than I would prefer.
It definitely has that sort of element of a JRPG where you transcend reality, basically always going to another layer deeper. It's like, oh, this must be the final level. Oh, no, there's another level of reality to transcend and we can go deeper. and it just keeps going.
And there's an interesting, like, I don't think this is much of a spoiler either, but basically you kind of, like, you think you beat the big bad and then things kind of settle down, and then you go back to town and they're like, and then one of the characters is like, oh, we can go deeper. You know that. Let's go deeper. And then the rest of the people in town are just like, don't listen to that guy. Just settle down. Chill, man. So theoretically, you could just say to yourself, oh, okay, this is for
maybe
me.
Maybe we're the bad guy.
Yeah, but of course, if you want to maximize your gameplay time or your value out of a game, there's more content to see. So of course you go deeper down. And I felt like those last couple of levels really lost me. Like, maybe I was mentally checked out.
They were definitely more creative, those levels. They definitely felt more like an actual challenge in the platforming and sort of looping around on themselves like a traditional Souls-like game, as opposed to the early ones were just very open spaces. Like, just very open, flat space.
I feel like those last, kind of last two areas beyond that sort of point took me out of the gameplay, and they didn't feel very innovative to me. Because you're mostly not acquiring new shells by that point. You are encountering some new baddies, some devious new baddies, actually. But I feel like they lost the whole kind of bright and charming, uplifting, sort of naturalistic sense and atmosphere and feel of the whole first 70% of the game that I felt like it felt superfluous.
The trash kind of takes over to an extent, metaphorically at least.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, they were gameplay wise, they're enjoyable. And
I think thematically, there are some really interesting mechanics. As a world building, as level building, I think that's at its peak. As by that point, you do kind of want the game to be done with, though, I guess.
I did. So that probably colored my vision. So take that for what you will.
Yeah, I don't think the level design broadly is the strong suit. Like I said, the early few levels are very open and flat, and I said because it's the water so murky, there's very few landmarks. It's really hard to tell where you need to go.
Yeah, and also you're underwater most of the time. There's some weird ass physics going on here. Like it falls for that whole SpongeBob SquarePants thing where there's like water under the water.
Like, so that's what I mean. The world building isn't there. Like, this world doesn't make sense. Don't think about it.
Yeah,
the details are really cool, but just don't think about it.
The oil is pooled up at the bottom of the ocean. I don't know. That took me out of the thing, but I am probably digging in too deep. I will say about this game, because I've kind of said all I had to say about everything, is I thoroughly enjoyed myself with this game. I probably played more of this. This is the most of a Souls-like game I've played, the furthest I've gotten in a Souls-like game. I've played some of the other ones, I've beaten some of the other ones, but I've not enjoyed kind of exploring platforming as thoroughly, building out my character as thoroughly as I have in this one. I think it's an absolute pleasure for maybe either new people that are newer to Souls-like as a genre, or people that like brighter themed games, people that like more lighthearted games. Thematically, it will go to darker places, but they're not that oppressive.
You can ignore that. It's the subtext.
Just the action is still fun, and I'm sure they will smooth over some of those technical issues that I was mentioning.
Hope so. Yeah, I think it's pretty broadly an easy recommend with some caveats. Like experienced Souls veterans will enjoy this, but they'll find it frustratingly simple at the start. Just know that gets better once you start expanding on your abilities. I think people new to the genre will find it incredibly frustrating, but know that the accessibility options are there and do not feel guilty about any means of tweaking those. So yeah, it does meet this really weird middle ground. I think that it's that friction with itself in the platforming, like this very sort of free, floaty platforming mechanics in friction with what you want to be a very tight, predictable game for these Souls-like games. And I think that's sometimes in friction, it doesn't entirely cohere together. But if you're willing to push through that, it's a very fun game. Like, it's just very cute, incredibly creative. Like, I didn't, not to spoil this, but there's one moment on a ship, shall we say, that was just a really fun setting, but there was a joke, like a sight gag that was just like the best joke I've seen in a video game all year. It was just really good.
Yeah,
and it is funny. Like I was laughing out loud very, very multiple times.
Yeah, and there was one boss that was sort of wielding like electronic appliances, because they were like electric eel, I guess, right? So electricity was their theme, and they were using like a toaster and things like that. And they used four appliances, and one of them was really,
I wonder like, what
really
this does.
Saucy choice. Yeah, let me just tell you that. So nice sight gag there.
A back massager, shall we say?
Sure. Yeah, really good. So I would say another Crab's Treasure. Play it. This was an absolute delight for me.
Yes. Yeah. No, easy recommend. Like I said, it's I love the way it streamlines so many of those mechanics into just those simple stats and the shells and the creativity of those shells. I don't think we really talked about those. But like there's 69 nice shells to experiment with, that some of them have the same effects.
Yeah.
They have different stats, so you can really mix and match. Now the shells do break, like sort of Breath of the Wild style. So some people will get frustrated with that. It does encourage you to be experimenting, always be trying a new shell, always be blocking. There's a bunch of mechanics that encourage, like, it sort of gently encourages you to just be blocking all the time, basically, in some clever ways, and just experimenting with those shells. So I thought that was really fun.
Yeah. Also, pro tip, like I said, use the skewering option to skewer your second favorite or alternate shell on top of your fork. And also, if you go to the shell store in New Carcinia, which is like the home base, the hub town, you can pin a shell that you purchase or repurchase.
Mm. Shell insurance.
That's right. And it will automatically respawn when you die, whether you had that or not. So that's a really nice option as well. It's sort of like a hidden cheat if you want to just have a particular shell leading into a tough boss fight. Definitely make use of that.
So, final question, Mark, what was your favorite shell?
I had a lot of favorites. I guess I preferred the kind of more metallic ones because they had a secondary use. They were generally tough defensively. Mm. They were used in a one particular level with magnets, which was kind of cool.
Yes, yeah, it was fun.
And so those are really good. I guess I like the Yakult. There's this Japanese drink called Yakuruto, and they called it Yakult, like occult. And for some reason, they said it's healthy or something.
That's what we call it in Australia. It was called Yakult. It's definitely outside of Japan.
Nice. It is a Japanese product, but yeah, they sell it elsewhere. And its special ability is it just heals you. So you spend umami to heal you.
Probiotics. Good
for you. So it was handy. Mm. And then some of the ones you got later on, like the Matryoshka, was cute.
Mm.
Yeah, I just like the variety of them. There's just so many fun ones.
Yeah, a couple of my favorites was the shuttlecock or the sriracha sauce bottle lid. They both have the same effect. They basically spin around like an AoE attack, but it does a bunch of damage for one thing. It recharges itself. So if you get enough hits in, it'll give you back the magic that you spent on using it, so you can just use it endlessly.
That's really good.
So I went through a chunk of the game just spamming that over and over again, basically, but it does leave you open to attack. So by the end, I had to lean back from that. The ice cream cone was very, very, like, it does a big burst of damage and freezes the enemy. So it gives you a window to get a couple of hits in, recharge your attack. But surprisingly, the last few bosses, I was using the Old Faithful Can of Fizzle.
Hmm.
The first shell you get in the game, I was still using it for the final bosses.
Well, if you built up your umami that high, it must have been pretty effective. There you go. Some building advice.
Go buy Fizzle.
There you go. That's one way to do it. I recommend melee attacks and health. You can last your way through any one-hit kill. There you go. Another Crab's Treasure. Shall we talk about the next game we're going to be covering?
Yes, for our main feature. What game will that be, Mark?
Yeah, well, we just agreed upon it. It's not a new game.
Dig into the archives a little bit here.
Yeah, it's a semi-classic from a notable designer, Uwe Rosenberg, called A Feast for Odin.
Oh, I do like feasts.
Yes, and I do like Uwe Rosenberg games. This one, I haven't played a lot, so we're going to have to get some games in the intervening time.
Yeah, we previously covered Caverna, I believe, and sort of Agricola in line with that. So yeah, it'd be fun to revisit another Uwe classic.
There you go. So we'll be covering that for our next main chapter. And of course, next week you can expect the playlist to come up. Are we going to have a 1 week break at some point? You mentioned
we might do. I've got big summer plans. My daughter's birthday and a few other family commitments coming up. So stay tuned to the schedule. We might take a break here or there, but yeah, look out for the playlist and A Feast for Odin. So if you have any questions, comments, reviews, want to join the club, you can email us at omnigamersclub@gmail.com or at our website omnigamers.club.
Yep, and you can leave comments just like Alex did. Sorry, Alex, I forget your last name, but thank you so much for leaving that lovely comment for us. It really kind of gave reason for us to do this all. It is actually a decent amount of work that Daniel and I put into this show every week or every couple of weeks to put the show and the videos together. So just getting a tiny bit of feedback really makes it all worthwhile.
Yep, no, nice that we're on the right track, and that there are other people enjoy. Like it's easy to feel like you're sort of talking into the void for a podcast. There's very little feedback, like physically and literally and figuratively. So always appreciate people sending in reviews or comments or feedback. So thank you, and remember to have a what's the word? I'm very tired. Sorry.
A very balanced diet of gaming. Just not any shellfish anytime soon.
Oh, yes. Yeah, watch out for those banana allergies.
There you go. See ya sometime under the sea.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.